RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation. The industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
And by Cabela's. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com and make sure your next camping trip is one for the record books.
And by Camp Casual. Family owned and operated since 2014, Camp Casual is committed to bringing retro-inspired dishware and vintage home goods to the camping and RVing community. Visit campcasual.com to see what fun products you can add to liven up your campsite, your RV, and your home.
Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes, and also Sweet Maggie the camping dog.
You can read about our adventures at rvfta.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are talking about the saddest thing of all, putting your RV to bed for the winter season. Many of our listeners live in cold weather climates, and they're getting ready to put the baby to bed for the next few months. We're here to help.
But even if you are lucky and live in the South, you probably store your RV for a stretch of time without using it. Mark Polk from RV Education 101 is here to tell us how to keep your RV in tip-top shape during the times when you aren't enjoying it at the campground.
You might think that winterization is just about giving your camper the pink drink of despair, but we know that safe RV winterization and storage requires a bit more know-how. You are listening to episode number 204, RV Winterization and Storage with Mark Polk.
Before we head into this week's featured topic, RV Winterization and Storage with Mark Polk, it's time for another What's Cooking with RVFTA segment. We got something really good cooking this week. But before we dive into that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Cabela's.
All right, Cabela's has everything your family needs to get into the great outdoors and camp in comfort. And you have something to put on your calendar, folks, if you are up here in the Mid-Atlantic region. We are going to be at the Delaware Cabela's store on December 16th. So we hope that all of our friends that are around that area can stop by and say, hey.
And people are already lining up, so you might
bring your tent outside the store.
Bring your RV.
You can park in the RV parking at Cabela's.
We'll post the hour soon on social media, but we're really excited to visit the Cabela's in Delaware because we have not been to this particular store yet.
Yeah, so definitely put that on your calendar if you're nearby. Now, one, we've been kind of highlighting the things that we have used regularly, like all the time over and over again in the last couple of years as we have been sponsored and outfitted by Cabela's. And this week I wanted to talk about the fact that basically I have an entire lineup of jackets and coats for all weather and all seasons because I've been using different coats and jackets from Cabela's. And to be honest, their branded coats and jackets are an incredible quality for an incredible price. I mean, we all know that those things aren't cheap. And I have ones now that I love that I'm going to be using for years to come.
And let's start with the Rainy River Parka, which I also have. I have one in black and one in
green. I think those were like some of the first branded things we got from Cabela's.
It's affordable Gore-Tex. Gore-Tex really does breathe well. You don't get hot and sweaty inside. It really does keep the rain off and keep you dry. And they do fold up into those little pouches. Mm-hmm. And when you pull them out of the little pouches, it borderline looks dressy. I wear them to school.
I wear them to work.
Yeah. And they look fine.
We've heard from dozens of people that have taken our recommendation on those and say that they love them. And it was a great recommendation and really affordable. Now, two other jackets that I've been wearing all the time in the spring and the fall. And then in the summer, when we've been traveling to cooler places like Canada. I've got the Pine Haven jacket, which is this lightweight unlined jacket that's like kind of fitted almost like a denim, you know, military kind of style jacket. It looks great with a pair of jeans and boots, or, you know, layered with a t-shirt or a button down flannel. And that people comment on that all the time in photos. If you post, you know, a photo with me in one of those. And then also the Catalina jacket with the Foremost Dry Plus. And this is my current absolute favorite because it's a lined, fuzzy, comfy rain jacket. So what it does is it keeps you cozy without making you hot, which is really hard to find.
So when it's wet outside and there's the chill in the air, yeah, like that double combo, you still feel really comfortable outside.
I've been living in this jacket all fall and also last spring. And then in the summer when we traveled up to Canada, I wore it all the time because it's that perfect like 50 degree jacket. You know, when it's 50 degrees outside and it feels that cold chill, it's the perfect jacket
and
for that.
And we love getting outside in that weather. Yeah. I've always loved getting outside in that crisp fall weather, even if it's a little bit damp and wet.
All right. So that's what's been in my wardrobe lately. I love those things. You can check out Cabela's full line of affordable outdoor gear at Cabela's.com. Cabela's, it's in your nature.
All right, everybody, it's time for What's Cooking with RVFTA, and this is a really special segment this week because we are launching a brand new cookbook from Kate Dunbar, and Stephanie's going to give you all of the deets because she has been really working hard on doing the editing and the pagination and the graphic design for this book. So Stephanie, tell us everything we need to know, or everything that you can tell us about the Campground Gourmet, Kate Dunbar's new ebook, and then we're going to share a recipe from that book.
Well, yeah, all I'm going to say is that the book is coming. The Campground Gourmet is going to be available for pre-sale very shortly, like within the next couple of weeks. And we are going to give you all the information both here and over on our social media pages in order for you to order your copy. But for now, we figured we could start trickling out the sort of teaser recipes, okay? And you know what the best news about this is these recipes are going to be over on the RVFTA blog as well. So not the whole book, but here we're going to release some. It's like a taste, right? A taste of the Campground Gourmet and what you can get if you order the over 100 page ebook from Kate Dunbar.
How wonderful. I can believe how wonderful this book is. But the one thing that has really blown my mind, I expected awesome recipes from Kate Dunbar. There was no doubt about that. She is also an amazing food photographer. And I knew that she had photography chops, but the pictures for this book, this is such a gorgeous cookbook. And everyone listening is going to want to go out and buy it because you're going to want to make the bacon pancake dippers. So yeah, just buy the book for that one recipe.
Well, so we're going to give you this one without buying the book. That's the treat, because I feel like this recipe in a way sums up a lot about what this book is all about, the Campground Gourmet. Think about it. Bacon pancake dippers, right? There's nothing more classic, you know, for breakfast at the campground than pancakes and bacon. But what Kate does, she takes very classic, almost simple things, and she makes them special. She kind of like turns the recipe. She takes it up a notch. She makes it super special. But to me, she does that without being difficult. And that's what I love the most about Kate Dunbar's cooking. So that's the case for the bacon pancake dippers. Okay. So this I absolutely love. I'm not going to give you the whole pancake recipe because you can find that over on the blog at rvfta.com.
And that won't be in the show notes, right? That's going to be
a separate blog post
on rvfta.com.
Totally, titled Bacon Pancake Dippers.
And that's the only title you need.
Okay, but what I love about this recipe is here's what Kate has you do. The first thing she has you do is on that hot griddle, like your Blackstone, is cooking your bacon. All right, so you're cooking your bacon up, you're making it nice and crisp, and then you're removing it, you're putting it on the paper towel to drain and to keep warm, okay, over on the side. Then you're making your pancake, you know, batter.
So far, I can do all of this.
You're doing this weekend. You're making this this weekend.
Let's go.
Okay?
Let's roll.
That's why I chose this recipe, because I want you to try to do this. The boys will love this, right? So you sit there and you make your pancake batter. Then you take your cooked bacon and you place it back on the hot griddle. And you leave about 3 inches of space between each piece of bacon. You ready for this? Then you carefully pour the pancake batter over the bacon strip.
Stop the madness.
Isn't this so much fun?
It's like, why haven't I thought of this before?
In a long oval shape, and you allow it to cook until those small bubbles form, right? We all know that that's the sign that the pancake is done. The small bubbles form on the surface and the edges get set. She says about 2 minutes. And then you flip the pancake over.
It's like a gigantic one.
Well, it's long. It's the size of a bacon strip. Okay. You're making the pancake over the slice of bacon.
Oh, yeah.
How cool is that? So then you flip it over and it cooks for another 2 minutes on the other side. So you're going to take it off and you're going to give your kids. I love this part. She has like you putting the syrup in like a little ramekin or a small mason, you know, jar. So you put the pancake in the little ramekin, the syrup, and then you sit there and you dip your pancake. That is really has bacon on the inside, okay? You have a bacon-wrapped pancake.
And then Wesley doesn't get to dump the syrup all over his plate.
Your bacon is wrapped with pancakes. And then you're dipping it in the syrup.
And I think that
my mind is blown.
I think that the taste of the bacon is going to permeate through the pancake and create a whole new flavor. I am making this weekend.
Yes, I want these. So I've been wanting these this is like one of the first recipes in the book because it's breakfast. So ever since I began working on this book, I wanted these.
Now, Stephanie,
bacon pancake
you've looked
dippers.
Very closely at these recipes, more closely than anyone but Kate Dunbar. Does each of them provide an epiphany like this one? Just like this sudden realization of deliciousness?
I don't know. You'll have to go through the recipes yourself and find out, will the RVFTA audience.
I'm
going
to be the first one to buy a copy of this book.
I know. All right, everybody. So that's your first taste
now,
of what's to come.
Stay tuned. We will give you an announcement on the exact day that we start selling this book when it goes up online. And we'll have a special price for RVFTA podcast listeners for the first few weeks Stephanie. Is that right?
We'll give all the details. Yeah, some things. You know, I'm trying to decide how long that special pricing is going to go on for.
She's being a little mysterious. Now, Mark Polk is not going to be mysterious at all. He is going to walk us through the winterization process and also give us some incredibly valuable tips for storing your RV in the winter months. That's Mark Polk from RV Education 101. He's a friend of the show. He is an absolute industry leader when it comes to RV safety, RV maintenance, and there is no one better to talk to about winterization and winter storage than Mark Polk from RV Education 101. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are incredibly excited and also just really feeling kind of lucky that we get to have Mark Polk come back on our show to help us all out with some of the major things that RVers have to deal with. Again, Mark Polk from RV Education 101 and RVOnlineTraining.com. And in this interview, Mark is going to talk to us about basic steps for winterization and also best methods for storage. So this is going to be a really valuable episode for everybody out there listening. But before we dive in, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
The North Point Luxury Fifth Wheel is an impressive blend of features that make for a camping experience that has something for everyone. Backed by Jayco's 2-year limited warranty, the North Point is the perfect choice for those seeking a chance to escape it all. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations, family fun.
Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, thank you guys for inviting me back on the show.
Oh, we'll invite you on every week if you'll come on, Mark. You're good at this.
I don't know about that.
I feel like it's like we're getting a gift. Like it's a present under the tree. So
we're very grateful for your experience and knowledge and your willingness to share it with all of our listeners. We think it's so helpful. So, you know, let's dive in to one of the most basic things we need to
and
do.
And right off the bat, I do want to let all of our listeners know, like, I want our listeners to look at this as sort of an introduction to winterization. And then Mark has all kinds of resources to go into more detail even than what we're going to do here. So, Mark, before we start asking you questions about winterization, where should our audience be going to find your courses and to find all of the other things that you do?
Well, the best place for them to go would be www.rvonlinetraining.com. And on the homepage where they land, it will list all of the courses, the video courses and the ebook courses that we offer. So we try to break that information into topics that RV owners are concerned about, just like winterizing and storing, is one of the titles. So if you were concerned about that, you could just purchase that chorus, or we bundle some choruses together that, that would work for like a towable RV or a motorized RV, and they could purchase the bundle and get all the information at one time.
All right. So we know that winterization is this big, huge topic. And you know what? We don't want to have a show here where Mark Polk leads us through every single type of RV out there and all the steps to winterize. What we kind of want to do is give a global view of it, break down those most important things to know. And then, of course, all of our listeners can go to your online, you know, RVonlinetraining.com, and they can get the course. They can go and they can look for information about their specific vehicle, they can go to that next step. But let's just start with that big view. For like these newbies who just bought the RV this year for the first time, what is winterization, right? And what are they going to have to worry about? Why is it something that all of those RVers are chatting about this time of year?
Well, that's a good question. And if you look in a dictionary, winterize means to prepare something like a house or an automobile for cold weather. So I always found that interesting, because your RV is basically a combination of a house and in lots of ways an automobile. So anyone who lives in a region in the country where temperatures drop below freezing needs to winterize their RV plumbing system to protect it from possible damage. And just to give you an idea of what can happen if you don't winterize the RV, any water that's left in the plumbing system will freeze, then it will expand, and it'll pop, you know, possibly rupture a line or a fitting. A lot of times the water will lay in a fitting like an elbow, and then when it freezes and expands, it'll just fracture that elbow. Think about your water heater tank freezing and then expanding and then splitting wide open. Something like that alone will cost the owner probably $600 or more, depending on the type of water heater it is. When I worked at an RV dealership, we saw that kind of stuff every spring.
So winterizing is really about preventing water damage, ultimately. Like, that's the bottom line.
Well, winterizing to me, there's a lot more to it than just protecting the water system, but the water system would be the most important part of the winterizing process.
And just to remind everybody out there, if you do have this kind of problem where like your hot water heater like blows up or you have a cracked pipe, the warranty is not going to cover that.
Yeah, it doesn't cover you that the fact that you didn't winterize.
Our
right.
Warranties don't cover stupid mistakes.
No, absolutely not.
All right. So, Mark, what are the main steps then for winterizing any RV, no matter whether it's a travel trailer or a motorhome? We know that there's a lot of differences along the way, but what do they all have in common?
Well, let's stay on the topic of the plumbing system for a minute. So when you want to winterize the plumbing system, I try to keep it as simple as possible. Now, I'm going to leave a few steps out here, but we'll basically discuss the process that you would go through. The first step you want to do is to drain as much water out of the plumbing system as you possibly can. Now, and some people will suggest that you use an air compressor to blow all the water out of the lines. But my thoughts are, if you drain most of the water out of the system and then you introduce RV antifreeze to the plumbing system, an air compressor really isn't necessary. So basically, you drain the water from the freshwater tank, you would drain the water from the low point water drain lines, and then from the water heater tank. And once you get as much water out of the system as you can, then you would bypass your water heater, so you don't waste like 6 or 10 gallons of antifreeze when you start pumping the antifreeze through the system. Next, you would need some type of method to get the antifreeze through the hot and cold plumbing lines. And modern day RVs, a lot of them have like a built-in system that to introduce the antifreeze. But if your RV doesn't have that, what I do is I disconnect the inlet side of the water pump, and then I connect a section of clear tubing to the pump with the other end in a gallon of RV antifreeze. And then all you have to do is turn the water pump on, and that will pressurize the system. And then you can just start opening all the hot and cold faucets one at a time. And you do that until you see the pink antifreeze appear, you know, coming out of the faucets. You need to replace the antifreeze jug when it's empty. And the big thing is you want to make sure you go through all the sinks, the shower, the toilet, if you have an outside shower, and then anything like an ice maker or a washing machine. And at that point, I like to pour a cup of antifreeze down every drain and make sure the pee traps don't freeze. And basically, I mean, like I said, at the beginning, I left a few details out, but for the most part, the plumbing system is winterized at that point.
Now, if anybody was like, oh, confused about the plastic tubing or anything, RV stores sell those really nice handy kits that include that along with antifreeze if this is your first time doing it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And typically, when I write an article on a topic or in our course, the first thing I do is tell people what they're going to need to have on hand to accomplish the task. So, of course, you need to have 2 to 3 gallons of the RV antifreeze, and that depends on, you know, how long, how much involved the plumbing system is. But I can usually do an RV with 2 gallons of antifreeze. If you don't have a water heater bypass kit, you'd want to have one installed if you plan to do this yourself. But almost every RV you buy today has a bypass kit installed on the water heater already. And then you just need things like that clear plastic tubing that you mentioned, a few basic hand tools so you can remove drain plugs and that type of thing. It's really pretty simple.
Now, Mark, you're saying 2 to 3 gallons, and that's really for a larger motorhome or travel trailer, because, I mean, you guys have a fairly large motorhome, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're talking about doing a pop-up or a small travel trailer or a hybrid travel trailer, you're going to probably get away with doing the entire job with, I would say, probably under a gallon. It just depends, you know, how much you pour down in the drains and stuff like that.
All right. So what are the most common mistakes people make? I mean, if you've listened to Mark on the show before, you know, he has an extensive background working at RV dealerships.
And hearing people's mistakes. what do people forget?
What are the most common things people mess up here?
Well, I've seen all kinds of things, but if I had to just kind of put it like some of the most common problems I've seen or mistakes that people make, I would say, like, forgetting to bypass the water heater. So what that means is if you don't bypass the water heater and you start to put antifreeze into the system, if you have a 6-gallon water heater tank, it's going to fill up with antifreeze before it starts to enter any of the hot water lines in the RV. So you're going to be, you know, you're going to spend a lot of money on antifreeze if you don't bypass the water heater. Another thing I see a lot is, you know, people will forget about an outside shower or maybe an ice maker, and then next spring the outside shower is completely shattered because it was holding water and it froze and fractured. I see lots of people add the antifreeze directly to the freshwater tank, and then they use the water pump to pump it through the water system. And that sounds like it makes a lot of sense to do it that way, but the problem is trying to get the antifreeze out of the tank next spring. And the reason for that is the drain on most freshwater tanks is located on the side of the tank, and when you completely drain the tank, there's still about an inch or more of water in the bottom of the tank, or in this case, it would be an inch of RV antifreeze. You really can't get all the antifreeze out of the fresh water tank, so that can be a real problem.
Are there any types of RVs that maybe really do need a professional to do winterization that just get, where things get so complex?
We've heard about people having special water heaters or things like that, that like more mistakes are made with. Is there some sort of expertise that you can offer people that have any of these maybe more techie systems or something?
I guess I take a lot of stuff for granted because I'm convinced that anybody with a little mechanical skill can they're capable of winterizing their own RV. And I agree, RVs are really sophisticated with all these modern day appliances. But as long as you get the RV antifreeze through anything in the RV that uses water, you're going to be okay. But on the other hand, if somebody doesn't feel comfortable or they have some of this high-tech equipment in the RV and they're just not sure how to get antifreeze to that point, then by all means, I would suggest just taking it to an RV service center or a service facility and let them do it for you. The important thing is that it's done, regardless of how it gets done.
Yeah, and for anyone listening who, and this is basic, right? And if you were to buy one of Mark's videos and follow the instructions, you'd be fine. But if there's anyone in our audience listening thinking, you know, I don't want to do this personally, I want somebody to do it, winterization is not that expensive. You know, it depending on your RV, it can be $100 or something like that. And some dealers even do drive-through winterization days where they have set days in the fall and you can just kind of show up and get in line behind the other RVs and they'll do the winterization for you.
Or there's mobile RV techs that will come to your house and do it, which is a nice little bonus you can get done while you're at work.
Absolutely. You know, there's, like Jeremy just said, it's really not that expensive. As a matter of fact, we try to keep the video training down to a point where it's more cost effective to do it yourself. But that's hard to do sometimes because you have to purchase the course and then you're going to purchase the antifreeze and the other things that you need to do the job. But
that's a one-time purchase, though. So if somebody purchases it one time from you, they're going to be able to winterize every year. Whereas if you do pay someone, you're going to have to pay that every year. So I'm gonna help people out with your costs there.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. And that's what I think what we've seen is that in the long run, if somebody wants to do it themselves, they can save money within the process of doing it themselves. And a lot of times people just don't want to hook the trailer up, you know, after they maybe put it in storage and take it in to get it winterized or whatever the case is. So it's really case by case basis what somebody, the individual, prefers to do.
I think it is really valuable to be able to do it, though, because sometimes like a cold snap comes in unexpectedly. And you might not, you know, be able to really quickly get it to the dealership. And it would be super helpful at that point that you just do it on your own. You know, there's been times where we had a trip planned and I wanted it at the end of the fall season, right, where I was kind of pushing things a little bit with the winterization. And then we'll also maybe just put our heat on overnight.
Yeah, we'll run out and put on the heat.
to just get through that cold snap and not have to winterize and then redo it later.
Yeah, and something to just keep in mind there, if your RV has water lines below the floor level or any type of water storage below the floor, then you would want to have, you know, heated basement type thing to prevent any freezing. So if you've got that kind of an RV or all the plumbing is above the floor, everything's above the floor and the furnace will keep it from freezing, then that's definitely an option. I've actually winterized our motorhome three times in one season because it'll warm up a little bit. We want to take it out, so I'll de-winterize it real quick. We'll take it out, use it for a week or two, come back, and then I'll winterize it. And I've got it down to where I can do it the entire job in really less than 15 minutes. I mean, I've just done it so many times.
And that right there is the difference between Mark Polk and Jeremy Pugliese.
And everybody else.
A lot of people on our Facebook do it. But what we do camp all winter long, but we just throw a porta potty.
In the bathroom.
In the bathroom and then, you know, use the bathhouses for anything else because I don't want to have to keep doing it. Like, I want to just do it once and be done with it. But like you said, if you get good at it and you can do it really quickly, if there's a mild weekend in the winter,
you can get out.
You could go out and go camping. Because like on our Facebook group, everyone's all so sad and mopey. They're closing up their RVs. And, you know, like if you're in Canada, if you're in Canada or something, you probably can't go winter camping or there's not that many places open. But we're in New Jersey. We're in the Northeast. And more, there are campgrounds open year round. Like Stephanie and I, we have options to camp all year long.
Yeah.
And it would be super nifty for you to be able to kind of do that quickly just to get out there for a weekend.
Comfortably. Now, Mark, you know, a lot of people have say, you know, we have that, oh, you change your clocks, you change the batteries and your smoke detectors kind of routines. I've been thinking about maybe, you know, what we should do with our RV kind of at the same time, right? Are there yearly maintenance tasks? I know a lot of us do this in the spring when we open up our camper, but are there any of those kind of standard maintenance tasks, preventative, which we've talked with you a lot about, preventative maintenance tasks that you always kind of have on your punch list when you're winterizing your RV in the fall?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, not to get it, you know, confused with the storage, other than winterizing the plumbing system, if you're as part of the winterizing process, I just recommend that people empty and flush the gray and black tanks really well. Of course, I like to flush the water heater tank too, because it gets a lot of debris down in the bottom of the tank. So I have a little flush handle that I put in when I drain the tank. I just flush it out real good to get some of that, those particles out. Now that's what the winterizing the plumbing system, and then anything above and beyond that, I would consider as part of the RV storage process.
And that's where we're going to go next. So look, I love that right off the bat, Mark told all of us that winterizing is not just getting all of the water out of the system. There's much more to it. And people get in all kinds of trouble when they just do that part of it and don't take other precautions for the winter.
Because let's face it, I've heard more stories on social media about problems that have come through maybe not preparing your RV correctly for storage than I have with maybe busted water pipes.
I think that is so true. We're going to come back in a second, and Mark Polk is going to tell us exactly how we should store our RVs. So
stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are incredibly lucky to be here for a second segment with Mark Polk. We talked winterization in terms of getting all the water out of the RV, but now we need to talk about the proper methods to store it and keep it safe over the winter. And I know Mark's got good tips here, and I can't wait to hear a few of his answers to these questions because some of them are a bit controversial. But before we dive in, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. And keeping your tanks in great shape is an important part of the RV maintenance process. Mark was just talking to us about those basic flushing, you know, systems and everything, and making sure that you keep them clean and flushed out. We personally have used Thetford products for our tanks since we bought our first pop-up camper almost 9 years ago, just because they gave us a bunch of Thetford products along with our first pop-up camper. And
that was so nice of them.
It was, and we just kept using them. So we've got fresh water tank sanitizer, to drain lubricants and level gauge cleaners. They have everything that you need to do it the correct way with products that are made specifically for your system. You can go to Thetford.com and see a complete lineup of their holding tank products. All right, welcome back, Mark.
Hey, I'm glad to be back. Thank you.
All right. So like I said, I pretty much think I see every spring more people posting sad, sad stories about damage that they find when they go and open up their RV and not from water. They might have done that whole, you know, water system close out the right way, but...
And a lot of people that have the dealer do it and do it perfectly, the dealer then is not going to do all of these other things for you to store it, right?
Yeah.
So Mark, what are the most important things we need to know for safely storing our RV over the winter?
Jeremy, you could write an entire book on that topic. But if I had to just kind of highlight some of the most important tips for storage, it would be things like inspecting all of the seams and sealants on the RV and on the roof. And then, of course, resealing any areas that are like in need of attention. It's so important, I can't stress it enough, that you look at at the every seam on the RV, or I always say anywhere the RV manufacturer cut a hole in the RV to install something, you need to inspect the sealants around that item. The roof is so important, because if it's just a crack in the sealant that gives water a path where it can enter inside the roof, it's just going to start spreading and spreading and spreading until you walk in there one day and you notice the entire back wall or underneath a cabinet is all soft and mushy. And at that point, you're going to spend a lot of money. So I would start with seams and sealants as number one.
Can I stop? Let me stop you there for 1 second, because this is so important. And what you're saying, it's like it's so common sense, but I think a lot of people make the mistake of doing that in the spring. Like, oh, I'm opening up my RV. Let me check all those things. But well, wait a second. Really, the ideal time to do that is before the winter months, when there might be snow sitting on the roof of the RV, as opposed to in the spring when you're opening up and you're in it more. So great tip. Yes. Do that as part of the winterization process.
And I'd like to say also that, again, I want to remind people, if you have questions about what Mark's talking about with his seams and seals, he has these video resources for you. In fact, I saw one. I wouldn't even be able to tell you where it was or what course, but I saw, Mark, a little video that you made that was so helpful about replacing that sealant around your storage, your RV doors in storage. Like, you just have all of those little resources for people, and you make it easy and accessible, and you tell people what they need to do it. So for people that have additional questions about that, go and check out Mark's World of Videos.
Thank you for that.
RVonlinetraining.com, just to remind everybody.
All right. So what is your next tip besides seals and seams?
Well, the next big one, I would say, I see it every spring, is batteries and battery maintenance. If your plan is to leave the batteries in the RV, then you throughout the storage, the period of time it's in storage, you need to periodically go out and check the water levels if they're lead acid batteries, and you have to keep the batteries charged. If you live in a really, really cold region of the country, then I usually recommend that it's best to remove the batteries and store them somewhere where they'll stay warmer and dry. When I was in the military, stationed over in Germany, I was in charge of a really large fleet maintenance operation. We had tanks and wheeled vehicles and every kind of vehicle you can imagine, and the batteries would freeze. Because they'll self-discharge as they sit idle. So when all these vehicles are sitting out there on the lot and they're idle for a while, the batteries, it gets so cold, the batteries would actually freeze. And then, again, they expand and they'll break the casing, and it's just a nightmare. And the same thing applies to, you know, batteries in an RV. When you put it in storage and you're not checking it, it is slowly self-discharging to the point where it'll be so weak that if it's cold out, it can freeze. So whether you leave it in or take it out, the key points are to, you know, periodically check the state of the charge. You know, is it getting low on a charge? And then you have to have some way to charge it. Otherwise, you're going to be buying batteries every year, and I see that a lot. And people say, why do I have to buy a new RV battery every year? And it's just because of, it's a lack of maintenance. So, you can't stress that one enough.
My guess is that you've either done videos or have a whole course on battery maintenance.
Yeah, we do. We have a deep cycle battery course where it really goes through a lot of this stuff and explains it in detail and what you can do to prevent that from happening to you.
And of course, if you have a big motorhome with a lot of batteries in it, that could get pretty expensive pretty fast, as opposed to the guy with a pop-up camper who's got one battery out there. I mean, so depending on your rig, that might be a really good course for you to purchase as well from Mark.
Just another point on what Jeremy just said. When you have a bank of batteries, like you have four batteries or six batteries or even two, when one of them goes bad, you have to replace all the batteries, because if you don't, you've got batteries that are have less of a less of a life left in them than the brand new one. So when they're charging, they will suck all the charge to them and neglect the new battery. So when you buy a battery, when one battery goes bad, you have to replace all of them if you're going to do it right. And that can get really, really expensive really fast.
All right. So we've got roof, seams and seals, batteries. What else?
I think a major concern I would have is the tires. What I usually recommend when you put the RV in storage, I recommend inflating the tires to whatever the manufacturer's specs are. And then if it's stored outside, I highly recommend that you purchase some tire covers to keep the sun and the UV rays from damaging the tire. I don't know if you ever looked at an old tire before really close at the sidewall, and you'll see little tiny cracks in the sidewall. And that's damage from the sun and the UV rays. And it's so simple to prevent by just putting covers over the tires when they're in storage and the RV's outside.
Simple and cheap.
One other tire. Yeah, it is. It is cheap. It's inexpensive. You just look at the tire size, and then you can go online and purchase a cover that will fit that size of tire. Well, the other point on the tires was you really don't want the tires sitting on like frozen ground or on asphalt, because that can cause damage to the tire too. So something as simple as putting some kind of blocking under the tire, whether it's like a Lynx levelers, plastic blocks, or just pieces of treated 2x8 lumber would work. And then I would say next spring, it's really important that you check the inflation pressure again, because just like batteries, tires will lose air pressure while they sit in storage. So they're going to be underinflated after, you know, 4 or 5 months in storage. So you need to check that and make sure you add the correct amount of air to all the tires.
All right, Mark, I'm scared to ask this next question because this is a controversial one out there.
If you get controversy in the RV world, this is probably where it comes from.
So should we be covering our RVs in the winter, or can we leave them uncovered? And I have no idea what Mark's answer is going to be.
Well, my answer is if the RV is stored outside, all the plastic, vinyl, and fiberglass and all the other components on the exterior of the RV, to include the paint, is exposed to the sun and the UV rays, and we just talked about what it can do to a rubber tire. So think about what it can do to your RV. It can really wreak havoc on the RV. So I say absolutely cover the RV, and I also say don't use one of those blue tarps that you see. Mm. You want to invest in a cover, and a good cover is going to have a few features and benefits that you would want to see in the cover you buy. And that would be, it's going to be waterproof, but at the same time, it's going to be made of a breathable material. And that is really important, because you want to help promote airflow when it does get wet. You want air to be able to go through there and dry everything off. Because if you put a blue tarp over it, it's just going to be a place for mold and mildew to grow, because the moisture is going to stay there all winter and you're going to have a big mess next spring. And another important point to a cover is to size the cover properly to get the best fit for your RV. A lot of times you'll see when people put a cover on and the wind starts blowing, the whole side of the cover's blowing in the wind. And then next thing there's a tear in it and it's basically useless. So if you do it right, if you're going to store your RV outside, I say use a cover. I did that for years before we built our garage where we're able to keep our RV now, which is really, really nice to have. But when you don't have that, I say cover it.
Even if you do have the really good breathable RV cover, is it wise to go out there and inspect it once a week, once a month, and really kind of shake it out and make sure there still aren't even some, you know, little pockets of water here and there? Can that still happen with even a good RV cover?
Yeah. If you really find the right cover, it will have a place you know, where you can get into the door, you can go in the RV. If it's a motorized RV, you would be able to start the RV, you know, periodically, and you could look around and check things out. Of course, like you get a bunch of snow starting to pile up, and that's an issue too. You would want to try to keep some of that off the RV if it gets really bad and creates a lot of weight.
Now, you just mentioned starting the motorhome, if you have a motorhome. So I'm assuming that that's something that you recommend doing if you're storing a motorhome as opposed to a travel trailer.
Yeah, I recommend it. And the reason for that is kind of twofold. You have a starting battery as well as a coach battery. So you have to be aware of the starting battery. So just starting it periodically and letting it run really helps, and it gets the oil circulating through all the oil passages in the engine. It has a lot of benefits. So that's something else that, you know, I recommend if it's a motorized RV, unless you take all the batteries out because you're in a really cold climate. Then I would start it just to charge a battery a little bit and exercise the engine.
Now, for our listeners, the reason that I really, truly love RV Education 101 is you guys, you cover everything. You know, there's like nothing that you don't cover. And we know you've done great content on keeping rodents and insects out of your RV. And it's, you know, it might seem like a silly thing, but we hear more, more complaints about somebody, you know, opening up their RV in the spring and finding damage from rodents, mice, squirrels, than we hear about people having cracked pipes or leaks. So most of us are just worried about those cracked pipes and the leaks, but that's really probably not the number one threat to our RV. So any tips for keeping rodents and insects out of the RV?
Absolutely, Jeremy. It's a huge problem. And I've witnessed the damage. It's the plastic insulation off the wiring. They eat rubber, like gas lines. They just chew on this stuff. And it creates a ton of damage, and it's costly to repair. So, mice and squirrels will do a lot of damage to your RV. Now, you hear lots of recommendations for keeping mice out of the RV. Like people say use mothballs or use dryer sheets or, you know, some homemade concoction.
Irish Spring soap, peppermint oil. Yeah.
Pray the rosary.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And they may have had good luck with that in the past, but the best advice I can offer is you want to start by thoroughly inspecting the underside of the RV and find out where mice might be able to get in. And I mean, you have to get under the RV and really look, because it only takes about a dime size opening for a mouse to get into the RV. What I tell people is go inside the RV after you've looked underneath and start opening some cabinet doors and drawers, pull the drawers out and just look and see if you can see any daylight. If you can see daylight, chances are mice can get in. So all these areas need to be sealed. And it's really not a big, huge job. I just take silicone caulking and I seal the small areas. And then if it's a larger area, like where the power cord goes outside and there's somewhere on it that's a big gap where you're not going to be able to seal with silicone. So I would use spray foam in those larger areas. Now when you spray foam, I'm talking about you go to your home improvement store and you buy a can of spray foam and it's got a little nozzle and you just spray it on, but you have to be careful because that stuff expands tremendously. So you just want to use enough to seal it. When it dries, it's going to expand. It won't hurt anything, but it's going to expand a lot. Of course, just something simple like removing any remnants of food inside the RV, that helps. But really the best prevention is after you seal all these areas, it's probably a good idea to set a couple of mouse traps. That's just preventive type maintenance there, but whatever you do, don't use any kind of poison like like rat poison or mouse poison, because what happens is the mice will eat the poison, and then as they get sick, they'll crawl somewhere in the RV that you probably won't find them, and then they die, and then, of course, you have to deal with trying to locate where the mouse is at. And mouse poison or rat poison can also be really harmful to your pets, so you want to consider that.
Great tip.
Yeah, and at that point,
Dawn, I'm listening.
Hi, Dawn.
Hello, I just wanted to say, if you set the mouse trap, make sure you check it periodically so it's not, if it gets caught, it's not rotting and smelling up the camper.
Right, because at this point, we've just entered into the territory where I would look at Jeremy and I would say, tow this RV away, and I never want to see it again. I never want to see it come back to the house.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people, that's a good point that Dawn made, because a lot of people store their RV quite far away from their home. And if you can't go check it, like we can walk out in our backyard and check it, so we're very fortunate. But if you can't check it like weekly, then you probably don't want to do the traps. So that's a good point for people who are 30 miles away from their storage facility or what have you.
I love the Mark Polk approach to all of this. It's like you don't need to be spraying peppermint all over the RV and leaving, you know, crawl underneath, take a look around, inspect things with some common sense, and you can avoid a lot of those types of things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and I think it's a good point to say, hey, look, the traditional route, like this is, you're protecting an investment, put some traps in there. And I think that for us, like we're like, yeah, that makes sense. You do it that way instead of playing these games where, you know, you hear people talk about, oh, I put dryer sheets in there because I heard it was the right thing to do, but they made nests out of the dryer sheets instead.
Yeah.
And it's like, I always get Mark on the show because I'm like, okay, I have a lot of things that we heard on Facebook that we need to talk about with an expert. Like, that's basically how we run down on this show.
Mark likes to combat a lot of these myths on Facebook.
So, Mark, we know that some people can't get to the RV during the season, like you just said, to periodically inspect it. That would be unfortunate, but most of us can every once in a while stop in, even if we're storing it at a lot nearby. What would you just, if we could have like a short little checklist for what we should do when we go and pop our head in our camper and make sure that everything's okay, what shouldn't we miss?
All right. I already mentioned it. We pretty much covered it in depth, but batteries are the big one. If you're going to leave the batteries in the RV, then you need to make sure that you keep them charged. We're not specifically talking about a motorized RV here. We're talking about an RV that just has an auxiliary battery or maybe two batteries. If you leave them in, you have a couple options. You either have to be able to plug the RV in like you would at a campground and let the converter charger do its job to top the batteries off. And I would say, you know, maybe monthly you'd want to plug it in for about 8 hours and then check the charge to make sure it's good. And you can do that real simple with a digital multimeter just to see what the charge is. 12-volt batteries should be around 12.7 volts if they're fully charged. Anything that drops below 12.4, you're getting into the dangerous zone. I actually use a product that's called the Battery Minder, and it's one of those real small little chargers you see. And what's unique about this one is it charges the battery, it conditions the battery, and it maintains the battery, and it will never, ever overcharge the battery. So there's a couple types of these. There are Battery Minders, what I use, but there's also one called a Battery Tender. So if you don't have access to be able to, you know, go there every week and check it, or you just can't do that and you leave the battery in, then I just connect the Battery Minder and just let it sit there. It charges the battery till it's fully charged, and it'll shut down until it needs a charge again. So that's an alternative method to keep your batteries charged. And I actually use that thing for other things we have sitting around the garage that use batteries. I like to restore classic automobiles, so I've got cars over at the big garage that have batteries in them, And I'll be replacing those batteries if they don't stay charged. So I use it on those. We use it on the riding lawnmower. We use it on ATVs, everything like that. So it's not just something you'd have to purchase for your RV. It's something that you can use on a lot of other things. No, go ahead, Jeremy.
Do you know the prices just loosely, like to buy that?
You'd have to go on their website and identify what type of situation you have, because they have some for like one battery, two batteries. You can even get one for a golf cart, and they're priced accordingly. So I would say you're starting at about probably, and it's been a while. I mean, I've had these for a long time. I'd say you're going to be about $100 for one that'll take care of a travel trailer, or a battery in a car that's sitting in a garage. And then as you go up with more batteries, of course, the price is going to go up as well.
All right. I'll link to those in the show notes for this episode, some of the options that Mark is talking about.
Part of what I'm really, hearing in this segment, and I'm sympathetic to our listeners that do have to store their RVs far from home. And, Stephanie and I have had to do that before too. And I know how inconvenient and difficult it can be to go visit your RV, once a week is probably just unrealistic for working people.
Yeah.
But I would really encourage everybody at least once a month during the winter to go out, because you never know what's going on. A branch could have fallen on it and done damage. I really think you need to go and check in on your investment. And I know that some people on our Facebook group even kind of make it a fun day out of it, and they'll go out and maybe even have kind of a winter camp out or something like that. Make it a fun part of your routine to kind of go visit your RV, because they are kind of like part of the family for us RV owners. So make that part of your winter routine for sure. Anything else we need to know, Mark? But besides heading on to, go ahead, please.
I just want to make one clarification. A lot of the new RVs you buy today come with a charger that it's called a 3-stage battery charger, and that's like a smart charger. So if you know for a fact you have a 3-stage battery charger in your RV, then you can plug the RV in and let it stay plugged in, and the battery that will do about the same thing that one of those battery miners will do. But if you don't, or you're not sure, a lot of the less expensive converter chargers or older RVs have what's called a single stage charger, and that's going to continue to charge your battery at the same voltage. And it will overcharge the battery and start to evaporate all the water. So you really have to know. You might want to go through your owner's manuals and see what kind of charger it is and if it's safe to leave it plugged in. And then the only other thing I would say about as far as going and checking on it periodically, you don't want a lot of snow piling up on the roof of the RV. It's not just a weight concern. But again, we talked about this, as the snow melts, you have concerns about water damage. So you have to be extremely careful. If the RV is covered and you try to get up there and remove the snow, not only, be careful about slipping and falling, but you don't know where the air conditioner is or where the roof vents are. So you have to be careful if you're going to try to tackle that. Otherwise, the only other option would be to wait till spring and let the snow melt.
A recommendation too there, because there is a lot of risk in getting up on a ladder in the middle of the winter. If possible, grab a buddy and make that a two-man job. Don't go off somewhere where you got your RV stored in the middle of nowhere by yourself, knocking snow off the roof. I've got my buddy. I can call for that. Buy him lunch, grab a pizza afterwards, and maybe make a two-man job out of that if possible.
Well,
absolutely.
Mark, thank you so much. Once again, every single time you're on our show, we get so many thank you notes from people, notes on our Facebook page. People say, oh my gosh, I learned this, I learned that, I needed this, and they're sharing it with their friends. So we really appreciate that expertise that you bring to the show.
And I just just want to say, there's a lot of people on YouTube and a lot of people out there who are producing content on RV safety, and none of them are as good as Mark Polk. And there's, I mean, frankly, there's a lot of people that should not be producing this content because they're not experts. I just see too many people who've owned their RV for 6 months and they start producing all kinds of content about this stuff. I mean, this is the industry
Mark's
leading
expert. Mark's been in
expert.
The biz for a while now. He's been around the block with RVs.
Mark, can you just tell everybody again, like, what courses could they go by relating to these topics, and where else can they find your whole world of content that you've created?
Okay. I want to just one last thing that we really didn't discuss that I think is really important before we go to that. I didn't talk about onboard generators, and a lot of like toy haulers or fifth wheels might have a generator, and almost every motorized RV is going to have a generator. You need to exercise the generator when it's in storage. And what that means is, if you don't, when I worked at a dealership, every spring people brought their RVs in with their generators. They either wouldn't start, or if they did start, they had that surging sound. They weren't running properly. And that's, you know, gas starts to set up and create problems. And the way to head that off is just when you go to visit your RV in the wintertime, start the generator, and you want to run that with about a half rated load, at least a half rated load. So for an example, if you have a 4,000 watt generator, you would want at least 2,000 watts of a load on the generator. That would be kind of like a couple portable electric heaters plugged in and running the generator. And if you can, you want to do that for an hour or two every month, if it's possible. What I do a lot of times, if I know that I'm not going to be able to do that or I can't get to it, I use some type of fuel preservative like Stabil, and I just put that in the gas tank, the amount that they recommend, and run it through the generator. And then you're set pretty much for not having those gasoline-related problems. But you still want to exercise the generator if it's possible. When that oil sits in there, it can start to corrode the bearings and stuff. You want to run it and exercise it to prevent that kind of thing too. And then what you just asked about, if you go to www.rvonlinetraining.com, we have all of our courses listed there. If you're interested in the winterizing and storage, that's one of them. Jeremy mentioned earlier, we have a battery course if you want to learn more about your batteries. We have ebook courses that I think are really helpful, and things like preventive maintenance. Everything we discussed today, you would find in that RV Care and Maintenance ebook. So you can go there and browse around and look and see what topics you're interested in. And just you have the opportunity to learn more about that topic.
And courses sound so intimidating. It's really not intimidating. There's videos, there's crossword puzzles to make fun, you know, out of the learning process. So it's really an easy format.
And that's what we love so much about you guys, is that all of your material is expert level material, but it's done in the most accessible way possible that doesn't feel intimidating. It doesn't feel like you have to be a gearhead, which, you know, we're not around here. We're not looking, you know, for deep dives into those things. We just want to know how to take care of our RVs.
I think a lot of new RV owners get intimidated by this stuff, and that's okay. It's okay if you're feeling intimidated, but then just go to that expert resource, go buy the class, go watch one of Mark's videos. And the tone is really friendly and unintimidating, to say the least. So,
hey, thanks again, you two. We really appreciate it.
We appreciate it, too. Thank you. And look forward to being on your show again in the future.
Hey, Mark, we're going to have to open up our RVs in the spring, and I have a feeling that you might be involved in that. So,
okay. All right. That's a good topic. Yep.
We'll talk soon.
We'll let you rest up. You can go hibernate a little bit, but we'll be in touch. Hopefully one day we'll get to go camping with you guys, too. We would love to actually see you at the campground.
See you at the campground, guys.
Yeah. That'd be fun. Yep.
Welcome back to the show, everybody, and a huge thank you to Mark Polk from RV Education 101 and to Dawn Polk, who always helps us get all these things together and absolutely plays an integral role over at RV Education 101. We love and adore them both, and they're such a great resource for everything you need when it comes to maintenance and safety and storage and winterization, and you're going to want to check them out, and we really hope to have them back again soon. So now it's time for our RVFTA News Roundup, which is sponsored by our fine friends at Camp Casual. And I'm feeling so blessed and lucky to have all of these friends out
there. We do. We've met some pretty amazing people through just kind of making this podcast and doing this. We're truly blessed that way. And our friends at Camp Casual are going to bless you with their vintage camping and RV inspired dishware by giving you 25% off their entire site to RVFTA
listeners. The blessing is the 25% off.
Well, it's also the Camp Casual stuff.
Yeah, I mean, discounts that are like 20% and less are not blessings, but once you hit 25%,
come
it's
on.
A blessing.
All right, code RVFTA25, all caps, RVFTA25. You can get those new, awesome, oversized mugs to drink your coffee with every morning, or the retro-inspired melamine nesting bowls with matching lids that we have a few sets of, or we've got a few of these Camp Casual blankets too. Super soft Camp Casual blankets, perfect for at home or around the campfire.
It is Camp Casual blanket season.
It is.
They
and
don't
if you
even
don't have
one,
you're missing out. You don't even know what you're missing out.
They don't even call it fall anymore. It's just
we
Camp
had
Casual
friends
blanket season.
That camped with us at a campground last year, and because they were coming in from far away, I said, I'll put bedding down for you. And I brought the bedding for them, and I set their beds up in the RV that they were borrowing from our friends, and I made their beds with Camp Casual blankets, and everybody in the family demanded Camp Casual blankets for their Christmas presents that year. After sleeping, they slept under our Camp Casual blankets for one night, and then they were like, must have Camp Casual blankets.
And Santa brought them, right?
Of course. He did. He comes through.
All right, let's catch up on some RVFTA news. So we've had a great run of Campground of the Week episodes. So if you're not listening to our Campground of the Week podcast, this might be a great time to go over there and hit subscribe and listen. So on the most recent episode, we had Carrie Cox reviewing Washita State Park in Arkansas, which sounded dreamy and like
near hot springs.
Near perfect.
So really
a
So this is kind of the perfect combination where it was destination camping where they really wanted to go to hot springs for their spring break. So they did, but then they ended up staying at this amazing campground that could have been their destination in and of itself. So when, you know, a lot of the time when you're going to a place that you really want to see, you might have to give a little with the campground. You're like, "Oh, we want to see the city, so we'll stay outside." But here you truly can get both. You get an amazing destination plus an amazing campground.
And this is really one of those classic campgrounds. The week before that, Stephanie and I reviewed Assateague State Park, which has been a long time coming because we used to camp there as teenagers.
Yeah.
Stephanie's family used to camp there as an annual tradition for over a decade. And we finally got our RV there. I mean, it's almost been a decade of RV ownership for us. We never brought our RV there. We finally did this fall. We had a magical three-day weekend, and it was a great review, and we're getting a lot of nice responses because, you know, Assateague State Park is a really popular destination.
Yeah, it's just dreamy, and you can't miss it at some point. Even if it's far away, make it a trip for you somewhere in the future. Now, another thing that we really wanted to make sure that you know if you're not a regular listener of Campground of the Week is that we did a roundup of campgrounds in the Great Smoky Mountains area. And the reason why we did that is because it is one of the number one requests on our Facebook group. People are constantly saying going to the Smokies. Why? Because it's the most visited national park
in
the country.
And there's an embarrassment of riches there. Like, people have a hard time picking not because there's not good campgrounds. People have a hard time picking a campground because there are so many good ones.
And it almost seems overwhelming. So you get all these recommendations. You don't know where to go. So what we did was we actually took the top, I think we did 10 or 12 recommendations that we have both stayed at ourselves there and that have been recommended by the majority of our Facebook community. Like, this is one person after another saying amazing things about this place. And we did a roundup of all of those. I think it's really a good roundup.
It's good. And there's a wide variety of price points. And, like, you know, there's ones that are resorts and ones that are a little bit more quiet. And there is the National Park Campgrounds in the park as well.
Yeah.
So if you're not subscribing to Campground of the Week, you want to head over and do that. We've been knocking out some great episodes over there.
And I want to say, too, on RVFTA.com, there's the blog section separate from the podcast section, and we've been posting lots of good recipes this season over on the blog. So we've got recipes to the white chili that a lot of people made and they liked it too, because I really like it, the tortilla pie, the French toast, Jeremy's amazing famous French French toast.
She's laughing at me. She can't even say it with a straight face.
The post with adult hot beverages, right? So that's a whole separate post with five different adults.
Everybody got excited about that one, too.
Yes, absolutely. I didn't have it linked in the show notes for some reason. The link wasn't live. And within maybe like 10 minutes of the podcast going live, I had like an email like, the link's not working on the website. Where is
this? People were panicking. They were like, I want my hot toddy this weekend.
I need my hot toddy recipe. And then we also have a post for the pie iron dinners that we recommended.
And so, you gave some great options there. I mean, what did you do? Three or four?
I think five.
And really good options for the pie irons. And the thing about those pie iron sandwiches is like anybody can make them. I mean, you can like make them with your kids. They're easy to do.
And I say I wrote the recipes down and that's a joke because it's really like put some of this in, put some that in, but I put it all there just so you can look.
There's a little technique involved as well.
Yeah. So check out that rvfta.com blog because we've been putting a lot of food stuff up there. That's just been our theme.
And with Kate's cookbook coming out, the Campground Gourmet, we're going to be putting some select recipies from that book up on the blog
as well. So I should say, I don't ever advertise our newsletter, but so I should do that right now because what you can do to kind of keep track is if you sign up for our newsletter at rbfta.com once a week, and you'll never get, we don't send out anything more than this, but once a week we send out a newsletter and it just has all the new stuff that we did that week. So if I did put up a new post on the blog, a recipe, all that, it's in that newsletter. So
we won't sell your email addresses. I've tried. No one wanted to buy our RVFT. Nobody wants them.
I think they're very valuable.
No, but we're not going to spam you with anything else but that weekly newsletter.
Yeah.
And we would love to see you signed up for that as well.
All right. So I will see you at the campground.
I'll see you there too. See you at the campground.
Bye.